Now, stay tuned. It's time for the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show, right here on KSCO.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks. Welcome to the show. Yes, just a word of possibility here. We may be interrupted by the verdict coming in from the Chauvin trial. Stand by and if that happens.
Here we go. Say hi to Susan Simon.
Hey, Susan, welcome to the show.
So they have just read the verdict?
Turn down the music, Richard.
Sorry, have so many buttons to push.
It's okay. They have just read the verdict on the trial of former police officer Derek Chauvin in the death of 46-year-old George Floyd on all three charges, second-degree murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter. They have found Derek Chauvin guilty.
Oh.
There's lots more information here, but that's the upshot of all three.
Good, so probably no riots tonight then.
You never know. Yeah. Floyd's family, by the way, started out by saying that they're calling for peace and tranquility no matter what the verdict is.
Oh, there you go.
All right, so news can be peace and tranquility. Wouldn't that be news in this case?
That would be news.
Thanks, Susan, for the update.
All right, well, thank you for that, Susan. Anything else? Okay.
All right.
See you later. That was Susan Simon.
Okay.
For our KSCO live breaking news report. And now we are back to our regular scheduled content from Dr. Future.
On this nice sunny day here in Santa Cruz. A little chillier today. Got Bobby in San Francisco. You're there, Bobby?
So glad to be with you guys. Yeah, so it's a beautiful day here, but very windy. So you might hear some wind chimes in the background, maybe.
Okay, well, that's what you warned us of last time. So we'll listen for those. You know, okay. I'd rather hear those than people eating. You know? Very good. Alrighty. Actually, we have a couple phone calls still
right
online,
off the
right?
top.
So
yes.
Before I even start the news, let's just talk to our audience a few moments.
That's right.
And then we'll get to our news of the day. Well, it's going to be an exciting show because we also have some big announcements from Apple. And we'll be talking about that in the 2:30 to 3 and cryptocurrency. Big show on crypto coming in after that. So let's go to our callers, Mrs.
All right.
Future.
We're going to start with Wendell from Reno. Hi, Wendell.
Wendell,
welcome to the Dr. Future Show.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just want to let you both know, and Bobby, that it's such a pleasant experience listening to your program, and it's very uplifting. Aww. And I know I speak for a lot of your listeners.
No, thank you.
I look forward to your show every week, and I always learn things. And I just feel so good. It's like having dessert, you know.
Well, thank you. We really do believe that the future is bright and that we're tuning in to all of those miraculous things that are bringing it in.
Yeah, the true renaissance is happening.
And there's so many wonderful ingredients to your show. Not only is it informative, but it's mostly lighthearted. I love the positivity that you both exude over the air. And I think that Facebook is making a real blunder with what they've tried to do, and you guys deserve to have the white audience, because in this time now with all the grim news, it's so wonderful to have a program like yours that reinforces the goodness that is out there.
Yeah. So which is always present. Whatever headlines are rolling through the mainstream consciousness, there's good news everywhere, and you just have to keep your eyes open for it.
And your laughter and your it just permeates the whole show. So
yeah, she has an amazing laugh, I must admit.
And I love you guys. Thank you so much for what you're doing.
Thank you, Wendell. Wow, starting the show off right here.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right.
Thank you, Wendell.
Appreciate that.
All right. Well, shall we keep going, my dear? We have a few other callers. Are you feel complete?
Thanks, Wendell.
Thank you.
Yeah, call anytime.
Our next caller is Anne Marie in Watsonville. Hi there, Anne-Marie.
Hey, Anne-Marie.
Hi, thank you all much. You know, I'm so glad. I cannot tell you how very relieved and happy I am that this officer was found guilty. And I'm not against him as an officer. I'm not against him as a human being. You know, maybe he was stressed. I don't know. But it's never about the how and the why and the because. I really don't care. When you take a man who is acting normal and walking around and buying stuff at the store and getting in the car, hello, I don't think that the drugs or the heart condition had anything to do with what happened. What happened, happened. And this is what we needed to focus on. And when I could not even listen to the defense. It was so disgusting. You know, as a society, we cannot move forward until these egregious wrongs are acknowledged for what they are and dealt with. And this is why I am so glad, because especially in the black community, but it has happened to others too, where officers, for whatever reason, maybe they've had it up to there with being disrespected and yelled at, called names, whatever. I am sorry. They shouldn't be treated that way. I know they have a horribly difficult job, but you still cannot, and it's not okay, to kill people. I don't care what your training is. Your training was never to hold somebody down until they died.
Yeah.
So him being found guilty is a good thing. And what really bothered me about the officer, Derek, is while he's squeezing the life out of this man, he actually looked bored. He's looking around like, yeah, how long is it going to take for this guy to stop breathing? I swear to God, did you see the look on his face?
Yeah, I did. I think the country is breathing a sigh of relief pretty much over this. So.
Yeah, I think so. I think people are really hungry for justice, and we have great sympathy for all the good cops in the world and what a difficult job being a peace officer is in heightened situations. But we all want officers to treat citizens with humanity.
One more thing, if I may. Like I said, this gentleman, George, who was killed right in front of our eyes, he was fine before this officer did what he did. So that should have been the focus. Now, I also want to say that I believe that all police officers, before they're hired, should be psychologically evaluated really well. And if they're hired, they should have ongoing counseling or some way to track their emotional state, their mental state, their stress levels, and so on. And everybody wants to say, well, the public disrespects us. I personally do not and will not. I've had guns pulled on me by the cops. I've been chased by the cops. I've had a shotgun pulled on me by the cops, and I will not disrespect them. I'm not comparing myself. I'm just saying I understand some of what these officers go through, but the public will only show more respect to the police when the police situation deals with the problems with their officers.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, appreciate your comments. We got to go, but thanks. The psych evals are a great idea, and college education for many departments now is normal, like San Jose.
Right back.
Okay, ski left this amazing day. We are going to cover some of our space news while we have a few minutes. We don't have much time.
Squeezing space into very little space in the show today.
Fortunately, there's not that much, so we're good. Did you guys all see that successful flight of Ingenuity?
Not only did I see it, I saw it live, and I laughed at myself for being up at 3 in the morning to see a 10-pixel little image, only a 90-minute delay from Mars.
No, I was happy to wait because there's a 15-minute delay before it gets here, so it's not real time anyway, so I might as well sleep and see it in the morning. And that was fine. You know, I saw the nice edit, and it was really cool.
Well, I slept better knowing that Ingenuity was on schedule and everything went fine.
So those of you who haven't heard, the Mars Ingenuity went up about 10 feet, hovered, and then came down again.
We actually have lifted off of another planet.
It rotated a little bit at 10 feet. Yeah.
And so now it's the Earth, the Moon, and Mars have all had successful launches of something, of some kind of aircraft.
And this is going to massively expand our capacity to see what when we're exploring new worlds.
Having
a flying aircraft to check things out
is... And you explore. I'm staying here.
Yeah, he's staying. Yeah, well, that's Taylor's in earlier. He's our Apple guy coming in at 2:30.
Can't help the comment on this. We're going to keep him on. We're going to keep him on low until after the break.
Okay. Yeah, you can hear him.
He's going to come in
the
background.
Get that kind of voice.
Because you know how he is. He'll just hog the mic.
So Dragonfly is the next step beyond Ingenuity. Dragonfly is the craft that will be flying on Saturn's large moon Titan in 2027. The Ingenuity and the Dragonfly are similar in the sense they're both flying craft, but the construction is way different from the way that they're powered to their sheer mass. Comparing the two is like comparing an eagle to a gnat.
Do you have any info on what the atmosphere is like on Titan?
It's much thicker.
Thicker than Mars or thicker than
Titan
Earth?
Titan has clouds, rivers, lakes, rain. They're not water.
They're not methane, oxygen.
Right? They're ethane and methane. It's the only moon in the solar system that has a substantial atmosphere, though. Even though it is of methane and methane, it's substantial.
Yeah, and it's,
you know, lots of hydrocarbons there.
Not a lot of oxygen. Yeah. I guess maybe it won't ignite.
hopefully not. It would be terrible if we lit the whole planet on fire by flying our helicopter there. It would be terrible. But I don't think that would happen because there's no oxygen for it to burn.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, exactly. What's methane without
oxygen?
Lots
of research to be done on that one.
Well, we'll find out. But a big part of the atmosphere is nitrogen, so that's good. It's a neutral gas,
right?
Yeah, despite the ethane and methane. So that's the next step on the flying craft. They're going to do several more flights on Mars over the next 2 weeks. I think that's the window that they've been given to see, to push the boundaries of the craft. And they said they're going to try to push it as far as they can. So we'll see. It'll be really interesting to see how far they go.
Yeah, I listened to some of that commentary. They have three possibilities. They'll either go much higher or much faster or much further. And they're debating which of those variables they want to experiment with first.
Yeah. The cool thing is it is like a drone, but it's autonomous. Mm-hmm. It has to fly on its own because of the latency delay.
And there's no GPS. So they have to orient themselves to their camera view when they move from their spot. They don't necessarily know where they are. So they're very cautious about where they take the drone so that they can get it back when they're done.
Yeah, yeah. It's a delicate procedure, way more complicated than flying your DJI here in America.
Right.
It actually was captured by the main craft. We have the Mars Perseverance rover right nearby, and it caught quite a few angles on it from its 23 cameras.
Oh, and you have a great article on all the different cameras that are on the mission, on the Perseverance.
That's right. Yeah, if you want to know more about how we're photographing Mars, there's a great article in Petapixel. Yeah, that's Petapixel. That's a lot of pixels.
Yeah.
And Petapixel looks at the Mars Perseverance rover and its incredible images and how it can look at an almond from a football field away in 3D. That's how good the cameras are. They're better in color. They have wider angle, wider field of view, and more resolution than any cameras set up before.
Yeah, the only problem is that they can only send back a tiny throughput. I think that the video that they sent back, the live video, they sent back like 1 in 7 frames per second.
Well, the real-time stream. Yeah, the real-time stream is narrower than the download later. Mm-hmm. But it can zoom, focus, follow videos. Built-in zoom is amazing. As a matter of fact, that's a feature I'm going to ask Taylor about in the second hour about the new iPad Pro. It's got some kind of tracking capacity.
Yeah, fancy camera motion.
Yeah, and you can track a tennis game with people moving in it, and the camera angle will move automatically. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk to him? I can't.
No, not yet. We'll be talking to him soon enough.
Okay, just checking here. Taylor wouldn't mind.
To make it easier, though, on Mars and also on Earth, Elon Musk has said his Starlink internet service is going to be fully mobile by the end of this year.
So his service will be mobile? Does that mean that us people who are using mobile phones can actually use it?
Well, the idea is that it was the antenna. They originally described it as looking like a UFO on a stick. Mm-hmm. It was too big to mount on anything except large RVs, houses, and buildings and such.
Nobody's going to carry one in their pocket.
No.
It's too nerdy to put a little shoulder mount with your antenna sticking up on top of your head.
Mrs. That's Future, for some people, there's no such thing as being too nerdy.
Yeah, I mean, it is like wearing your Elon Musk uniform, right? Like, here's my Starlink, where's yours, right?
It's a badge of street cred. To have such gear. Yeah, I've wanted to carry my 360 camera in a hat but no such luck yet. But however, now that it's using the GoPro mount, I think I might have an option. But the GoPro mounts weren't originally designed for 360. So that's another topic. The new Starlink, by the way, into the Mars link is that when the first Martian starships land, just before they land, they'll be deploying a fleet of Starlinks in Martian orbit. So Mars will immediately have internet.
Wow, really?
Wow.
The entire planet. With a specific focus on the area where the first colony will be, the Alpha colony.
And so is that all happening in 2022?
No, the robot ships. There'll be a fleet of robot ships that are being scheduled for around 2025.
2025.
Time frame.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, actually,
so
maybe
Mars
2024.
Mars is going to get their Starlink in record time.
Yeah, there's a window. There, every 2 years, there's a window for launch.
Right.
And I think they're going to try to make the next window. Mm-hmm. The initial ones will be robot. Then after that, in 2027, is when they plan to bring people. Mm-hmm. After the initial robots build the fundamentals of the colony.
Can you believe that? Some people who maybe are listening to this podcast or this radio show are going to be going to Mars
in this decade. It's happening really fast.
I can't believe it.
Now, see, the earthbound ones are skishing their head. No, the whole
This is why we do not give you the microphone. This is the Dr. Future show, not the Dr. Stupid show.
Yeah. Though sometimes we might feature him for a segment just to gauge where your thinking is coming from. Anyway, he is really a very smart guy, and he's going to tell us all about Apple stuff later. But I do think that the real purpose of Mars is to really sharpen our intellect. We learn about ecosystems because we have to build one. Here, we got this massive ecosystem we barely understand.
Yeah, Mars is definitely a BYI planet.
Yeah, we're going to bring
BYO.
We're going to bring our own microbes. Yeah. Yeah, they can create BYO. Design your own planet is what it's coming down. We are bringing our understanding of ecosystems to Mars, and if what we understand works, it'll work there. If not,
Buckminster Fuller, right? We are in Spaceship Earth, and we want to get to Spaceship Mars, but there's a whole lot of infrastructure we have to bring with us because we have these genetic design bodies, right?
That's right.
DNA code.
And we live
that's
in an ecosystem
here for billions of years, and we want to go there, and it's the beginning of a new cycle.
I'm not part of that we.
Don't worry. No, we're not.
That's why your microphone isn't on. Bobby's is, though.
That's because he never told
me. Well, he laughs, you know. He's like Ed McMahon sometimes.
You know, you have an amazingly loud voice from across the room over there, Taylor.
Yeah.
It's picking up on the other mics.
So much for my plan for news.
Yeah, come on, hurry. You still have another minute. You can squeeze it in.
But the Starlink stuff, I think, is great because, I've been following these people, and they say they were geofenced up in Canada or northern latitudes. But then they would take them out like 10 miles out. They would still work. But now, airplanes, RVs, ships, trucks, they all can...
They'll all be coming mobile. Right, yes.
Yeah.
Bicycles,
yeah.
Monkeys and with Neuralinks.
Yes. You'll have high-speed internet, which would change everything. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, on your keychain and on your keychain even. Yeah, it's getting there. Yeah. This is also leading to more tracking. A lot of people are worried about tracking, going down to that level.
I would think if you get lost on Mars, you would be open to being tracked.
Initially,
you don't want to get lost on Mars.
You certainly don't want to lose your keys.
And there's not going to be that many people looking for you. So
No. Well, initially, but they have big plans.
Then you have your air tags with you.
Yeah, your air tags. That's part of the announcement. The next day is the Apple Air Tags just came out, and we'll tell you all about that after the news and weather. And we'll see you in a few minutes with Taylor Barcroft and the Apple Report, based on today's big Apple announcements. See you in a few.
I was blind.
Okay, welcome back to the show. Boy, this morning at 10, there was a special broadcast from Apple about all their latest and greatest stuff. And to go over that with you, we have in the studio, here in person with us right now, Taylor Barcroft.
He's our Apple guy.
Hi, everybody.
Been an Apple since...
Hey, Taylor.
Apples were invented.
Hey, Bobby, why don't you reply to your texts?
Oh, my gosh. I didn't even see it. I didn't even know about the event this morning, so I haven't seen any of this. So.
Oh, really?
Oh, you didn't even see it. I told you. I warned you. I gave the pre... last week about when it was. And
guys, yeah. The clock is ticking.
Let's get
going.
We're
going to
waste
stuff.
It on...
Okay, the Apple event.
That.
Great music to begin with.
Yeah.
Environmental initiatives. They're going to be carbon neutral by 2030, including all the usage of their devices globally. Mm-hmm. Which is a pretty impressive carbon neutral target, and it's only 9 years away.
All right.
Apple Card, they got the family thing now, so you can share an Apple Card
amongst
the
credit card
in the family. Yeah, forget about that. Podcast, they overhauled the podcast, and they're going to charge for podcasts pretty soon. That's a tricky...
That's what they were setting us up for,
well,
right?
Well, they want to be the Spotify of podcasts, right?
They're going to charge for podcasts that you can't get free.
Right.
Or they're going to create podcasts that are not free. Mm-hmm. Up till now, they're all free.
Right.
They're going to do like an Apple store for podcasts, right? It'll be up to the producer what they're going to charge, but Apple will get their cut. And they'll be like a Spotify model where they cut deals with the producers. You
know? Okay. And then they came up with the purple color for the iPhone 12. So everybody that just bought an iPhone 12,
yeah, does that mean anything to you? Purple?
Mm-hmm. Not to me.
Oh well, if you noticed when Biden was elected at the nomination, all of the cool kids on the Reach Across the Aisle Club for the Democrats were all wearing purple, right? Because it's red plus blue.
Okay,
so that was my interpretation.
Uh-huh. I still run on an iPhone XS Max. Waiting for the 1 terabyte iPhone 13 in September, then I'll pull the trigger.
Okay, what else?
Okay, then they had Find My, a little revision to Find My, and they have AirTags using the U1 chip that's in the iPhone 12.
This is to find things. You put one on your keys, and you can find your keys with your Find My.
Yeah, they're selling key
app.
Type Fox. Key tags for the AirTags. So you can get four for $100 for $99 or one for $29, and you can customize them for free. You can get them engraved for free. Even if you buy four, the engravement works on each one. So you can have separate engraving on each one.
So, you know, these little tag fobs have been around for a long time.
But using Find My iPhone kind of app is
integrating
new.
Them with Find My is the new thing.
Precision finding, they call it. They got a way to narrow it down really easily and make it much easier to find something that's lost.
It's really tiny. Can you, slip it into someone's wallet?
Oh, yeah. It's only about an inch in diameter.
Yeah.
It looks very much like that little device that John Sculley's company made. What do we call that one? That was on your wrist. There was like a little, it kept time, and it was this really super well-designed round thing.
The Runcible.
Oh, that's what it was. Runcible was,
it's a, round,
was a later one.
Okay, enough of history. Next was Apple TV, July 23rd. You can order it. That's this Friday.
Apple TV. What's the big upgrade there?
Yeah, I thought you don't like Apple TV.
The big upgrade. No, the Apple upgrade is that the second season of Ted Lasso starts July 23rd. That's the big upgrade. Okay,
now,
no, I'm just kidding.
Saying something
just
about
kidding.
Roku
they have,
this morning.
He's really a Roku guy.
It's running on an A12. Yeah, I just got a couple of Rokus and I love them.
Better than Apple TV.
Yeah, it has Apple TV and the Roku.
Built in. It's a subset. Yeah, Roku has it all.
Yeah, Roku is agnostic, source agnostic.
There goes our Apple sponsorship.
Well, no, I still think that you can have an Apple TV. I use the Apple TV, too. I'm thinking of buying the new one.
Yeah.
Because it has this way of calibrating the color on the screen.
Really?
To get better color than ever before. Yeah. You put your phone up against or near the screen.
Uh-huh.
And it feeds back to the Apple TV what the color is.
Wow.
Oh, that's
so
ingenious.
Adjusts the color accordingly. It's really amazing. Mm-hmm. And the price is the same as before.
That's amazing. Wait a minute. Let me just recap what you just said. So now your phone can watch TV and it can see the colors better than you can?
No, the phone is used to recalibrate the color. It's a feedback mechanism onto the new Apple TV product.
I see. So your phone doesn't have to watch TV with you.
No, it doesn't watch
it's
it.
For a minute.
Simply
it's
a cyber buyer.
It's just a machine. It doesn't, it can't see
anything.
Some
people, it's their best friend.
Cybernetic feedback
I'm just
loop.
Trying to,
it's a calibrator.
Anyway, it's still only $199 for a 64 gig model or $179 for a 32 gig model. It's the same thing. You can order them April 30th.
But they used to be cheaper.
Okay,
they
now were, we go into no, the really big deal before we run out of time.
Yeah.
The really big deal is the M1. Does anybody know what the M1 means?
It's a chip, isn't it?
System on a chip.
It's the processor that replaces Intel in all the Macs since last fall.
Wow.
So they have portables, and then they have the Mini, and now they have an M1 iMac.
Mm, now, what's so great about the M1?
Seven colors.
I know. Okay, great. I like colors, too, but what's the big deal about...
Look at how thin the new iMac is. It's like... The new iMac is like a quarter of an inch thick.
Yeah, it's like...
And I said, how did they get a motherboard in that thing?
Okay, in order for anybody else to ask Taylor a question, we have to put Taylor on silent for a minute. So, were you trying to say a question there, Dr. Future?
Yeah. He was asking about the M1.
Yeah, the M1 chip. I want to know more about the M1 chip. That seems to be more important to me than colors.
Everybody has to watch the video. That's a rule.
Well,
so
that's about the M1.
We're talking about a video that everybody has to watch. If you haven't watched it yet, you have to watch it.
Oh, the show today.
So you go to apple.com and look for the keynote today.
Okay, fair enough. Now that said.
The event, Apple
and
event.
And last fall. They explained it in more detail last fall.
Okay, but what's your 30-second understanding of the M1?
It combines a whole bunch of chips into one chip.
Many to one, okay.
And that's how they were able to get the motherboard inside this quarter-inch thick iMac. There's no bulge on the iMac anymore. It's just a quarter-inch thick.
The whole thing.
And you look at it and you go, there's no way a motherboard's inside that thing.
Yes, and pretty soon it'll be transparent.
And then they got the audio. There's two subwoofers in there, plus a tweeter on each side. There's six speakers.
And you're an audio guy.
And it's only
a
quarter inch thick.
And it sounds...
And you're going, now how can they do? They can't possibly do that. There's no way.
I see. Okay, well, that sounds good. Yeah, it sounds good.
There's three mic. There's a three mic array.
Uh-huh.
And as Al was mentioning earlier, the 12 megapixel front screen is ultra wide screen side camera
on the
iMac. On the iMac that can track you.
Oh.
Oh, it's on the iPad as well.
If you move around,
well,
let's not get to the iPad. Let's wait till after the break
iPad. Yeah, it is. It is. Trust me.
Okay.
Okay. It's a nice feature that can be applied on all the cameras.
Breathe.
This thing, if people are added to a FaceTime call, the camera will dolly to the right or left according to where that other person came in, according to the three speaker array inside the iMac.
Right. So it's a built in digital dolly.
Digital, that's it. It's a digital dolly. You should copyright that. Digital dolly.
And it was given during the Hello event.
It's
Hello, digital dolly.
It's a miracle.
Yeah.
iMacs and you go, why would anybody want an old iMac though with the big bulge? It looks like they got diabetes or something.
Looks middle-aged.
Now they're totally... Slim, super slim.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we still got a little more time. So after the IMAX, you got to watch the video. We're just talking about the video.
Okay,
you can't do this without watching the video, folks.
Well, we are. So go ahead.
Okay. They call that center stage, by the way. The ultra wide.
Center stage, the digital dolly.
The digital dolly, 12 megapixel camera on the front, on the screen side of the iMac.
Right.
Okay. Let's go directly to the iPad.
Well, the iPad Pro.
iPad Pro.
Uh-huh. And there's two of them, right?
Whoever thought, I want to know if anybody ever thought that a processor that was in all the Macs would be inside an iPad. Can anybody truly say that they knew that was going to happen?
Well, when Big Sur came out, it seemed to have a very iPad-friendly interface.
Yes, but the
say.
Microprocessor.
The power.
The power of the computer.
In
an iPad.
Yeah.
Wow.
That makes the iPad a fully blown computer now.
Yes, so you don't need a laptop anymore.
It can drive, and it can drive that big honking...
The big screens, right? So it does just about everything the laptops do.
Liquid Retina XDR display.
So your next laptop could be the iPad.
That's right. And they're coming in white. And you can get 2 terabytes It's about $2,500, $2,600 if you're going to go all the way with 2 terabytes.
Yeah. Well,
and it's got the.
I know you are, right? You're going to go for the full 2 terabyte version.
Yeah, it's got mini LEDs. It's got 10,000 mini LEDs in the 12.9-inch
model. That's remarkable. 10,000 LEDs to make the screen. What does that translate?
That's background LEDs.
What does that translate into? That's a better color than what we have now.
It's better contrast ratio.
Better contrast, like 1,000,000 to 1 or something.
Yeah, 1,000,000 to 1.
Uh-huh.
That's right. Wow. And I guess I'm cut out. You got me turned way down.
No, she's. I hear you fine.
I'm looking at your levels, and I'm just keeping you equal with everyone else. You're very excited.
Okay, I'm very excited. You can order it in April 30th, and you can get it by late May. But if you want the 12.9-inch model, you better be in the place where you're supposed to be in the first 5 minutes of April 30th.
Really, the 12.9 is going to be the big...
Are you going to camp out in front of your screen so you can order in the first minute?
Yeah. The yields are low on this micro...
Harder to make, huh?
Micro LED yields are still too low to get big quantities. So you got to order it right away to get it. Otherwise, you're going to have to be on hold because all the 12.9-inch models, all of that model...
Yeah,
is going to be the mini LED. It's not like you can't get the mini LED.
Right, right. So it's just the timing. Yeah. So if I want it right away.
It's not in the 11-inch model.
So what do I have to do to get it right away? I have to be.
You have to be somewhere on April 30th. I'm sure they'll tell us what time on April 30th.
Okay.
I don't know what time yet.
All right.
But it will be revealed shortly.
Yeah. Okay. You keep us posted on that then. Okay?
Some journalist will figure it out.
Right, right.
And it'll be posted that way on the Apple website.
Excellent.
Okay. So we got through all the facts.
Yeah, good.
Now we're going to go to a break.
Then we'll talk about it a little bit.
Okay, good. Good. Okay. That was
very exciting. I'm all a Twitter.
Yeah, I can tell. Oh, boy. Well, I am curious and get a couple things.
Did you ever think there would be a computer processor inside an iPad?
I thought we'd have one in our brains by now, but that's another story. Okay. Well, I've decided I don't really like implants. You know, I'd rather have...
Oh, you must have seen me for one.
No, I'm trying. Okay, welcome back to the show. Yes, that was a lot of fun. I watched that whole video, that whole hour video on that minute break. You know... And it was great. I really loved it. I really liked the way that Tim Cook plays a superhero running on the roof of the Apple Donut building.
And, I loved the movie for the key fob.
The key fob movie, hilarious. Yes. That's the little thing that you can put on your keys and find my AirTags. Okay, and then you can find it anywhere. They're 4 for $100.
99.
Excuse me.
Plus tax.
Yeah, tax, yeah. And then there's, you could do all kinds of, you could put them on anything, right? I mean, you could.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to put them in my saddlebags in my bike so that whoever steals my saddlebags, I can go catch them.
Right, yeah, you could use it for stuff like that.
Yeah.
Put it in your husband's back pocket.
Three-piece saddlebag setup coming up on my bike.
Yeah.
For groceries.
Well, that's great.
75 liters. That's just short of 20 gallons.
20 gallons.
Almost 20 gallons on the back of the bike. So I can go to Costco without my car, as usual, but this time I can get more stuff.
Yeah, well, that's the key. You know, bikes can be really handy.
Very Santa Cruz. So you're riding your bike to Costco, huh? Okay. Coming home with a load?
Always. I rarely take my car.
Okay, well, we're just the opposite right now. We have our bikes. The iPad Pros with the M1 chip, they got a USB-C connector that also is using another standard, Thunderbolt
4.
Thunderbolt.
Yeah, so it can drive the full-blown $10,000 screen that they sell. It's Retina XDR display. They're saying that the screen on the iPad 12.9-inch iPad Pro is a Retina XDR display. They're saying it's the same resolution as that big honking thing that they sell for the Mac Pro. Yeah.
Wow.
And you can drive it from the iPad. It can be a second screen. You can buy that big monitor. What is it? Is it $10,000 or $5,000? I can't remember.
I don't know. I haven't bought one lately. I'll have to look it
up. You didn't buy, I thought you guys would buy one right away.
Yeah, well.
Aren't you guys made of money or what's going on?
Yeah, I spend 10 grand for monitors all the time.
We have a lot of common sense.
Sure.
We direct our resources towards our priorities.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's fine.
The display is brighter, better color resolution, called mini LED, and a 12 megapixel front-facing camera. Now, we're going to be using that 12 megapixel front-facing camera a lot if we look at the last year as any indication of use.
And it's ultra-wide. Right? That's an ultra-wide camera.
Ultra-wide camera.
Yeah, they're okay. using the wide camera that's been in there.
Maybe that's
now.
Why it has a digital dolly capability where it can zoom in.
Well, that's software. It recognizes a new
object.
Yeah,
within the ultra-wide field.
Yeah.
So that he could track
it. Software recognizes a new subject or that you've moved, even just you. If you move around, the camera will follow you.
So if you pace back and forth while you're doing your audio blog,
yes,
or video blog.
That auto dolly will kick in.
Yeah, it'll just kick in.
It's a miracle. I don't know how they do it.
Well, they explained how they did it.
They tried to. Center stage.
Well,
but
it's a software trick. It basically is taking the cropped version of a wider angle shot and bringing it into the center of the focus.
Sure, I understand what you said.
Yeah, she just takes the middle, the motion part of the picture. Now, the 11-inch model, $799, the 12.9 starts at $1099.
Yeah, but you only get a really small amount of RAM.
Right, that's the minimal.
But you can go to 2 terabytes now.
Yeah,
so they're getting ready for the 1 terabyte phone. By doubling the size of the iPad.
Now, why would I want to ever get 2 terabytes with the improvement
4K.
On the being able to connect hardware to the thing? Like, I can put external hard drives now on it. So
editing 4K video. You can get a whole bunch of 4K video in there with 2 terabytes.
Just running in the RAM.
Yeah, in storage on the iPad. So then you can go to the beach and edit video. Which is what everybody wants to do,
without having to carry any external hard drives.
Right. And you can still hook up an external hard drive with that USB-C connector.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If you can, then how much extra are you paying for those 2 terabytes?
It's $400 more.
$400.
Yeah, it goes from 512 to 1 terabyte for $400 and 2 terabytes for $400. So the first 3/4 of a terabyte is $400, and then the second full terabyte is $400.
Uh-huh. If you're hardcore editing video like me,
just want to have the maximum size like me, who never uses it,
it's the one to get.
It's the one to get for about $2,500, $2,600. It's the same price as a computer.
It's a computer. A high-end laptop.
It's a computer.
I have a high-end laptop, and it didn't cost that much.
That's right. It's a computer.
But it was a PC. So.
But it's an iPad.
Yeah, it's an iPad.
With a
right.
computer processor inside.
Yeah.
And it's so thin, and you look at that, and then you look at the iMac, and it's so thin, and you go, the iMac isn't any thicker than the iPad. I'm sure they're within a couple of millimeters of each other.
Huh.
I haven't looked it up yet. I didn't have time to figure that out.
Now, the iMacs, they come in many colors. That reminds me of the early Steve Jobs iMacs.
Oh, sure.
Right, and the first ones came out in multiple colors.
Absolutely. That's what they're doing. They're going back to it's also like the new iPad Air also has that.
Yeah.
Those colors, all those different colors.
Yeah, I noticed.
It runs on the A14.
Yeah.
Well, and rainbow colors is really Apple's trademark in some ways.
They started
with
the rainbow thing.
Yeah, the Apple
rainbow
logo used to be rainbows. And then it went
white.
Yeah.
No, but
politically correct today.
No, it's
in the grounds at Infinite Loop offices, they've got that rainbow bridge now.
Yeah. Those are the same colors that rainbow entertainment dome, whatever you call it, like a Hollywood Bowl. Those colors are the same colors that the phone and the iPad come in, iMacs come in. Mm-hmm. Same
really?
Colors.
Same
it's the same colors. I looked at the colors, and it's the same thing.
Even this new purple?
Yeah, purple's in there.
Yeah.
There's 6 plus 7. I don't really have the list in front of me. I can try to get it.
No, it's all right. That's right. No, not to worry about that.
7 is silver. So there's 6 colors plus silver.
Plus silver. Okay, well, I like silver. That's a classic.
That's what's always been silver.
Yeah.
That's classic, right.
Yeah. So what's really exciting about this for yourself?
The M1 being inside an iPad. I wasn't really necessarily going to get a new iPad, but when they said the M1 is inside this iPad, I said to myself, this is a revolutionary moment. And then Tim said, no, it's not revolutionary. It's a breakthrough.
Some new words here. So you're going to say something about this, Bobby?
Well, it's got 8 CPU cores and 8 GPU cores. And so if you wanted to do video editing, you wouldn't think of going to your iPad. But now you can, is what you can do. It's so fast. Plus, it has these neural networks that are built into the chip itself. And so there's a little bit of AI in there. And if you could take advantage of that, write your own programs, there's some pretty amazing things you could do.
I'd like to be able to do that. Though one of the reasons why I have a PC is that they're far superior when it comes to doing virtual reality. And Mac stuff is just not...
But these do have LiDAR on them. These
I know. These have the potential of doing well with VR. I think they're focused on augmented reality.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
More as the Apple thing.
The storage options are 128 gig, 256 gig, 512 gig, 1 terabyte, and 2 terabytes. So if you only want 128 gig, that's still enough if you're not editing video.
Yeah, if you're mostly into
text. It's only $10.99.
Yeah, okay. Well, there you go.
That's $1,100.
Yeah, so if you're going to get a new laptop, might consider that instead, even at that price, because you can have external hard drives, external keyboards, external screens. You can expand it, but you can also take it.
But if you can afford it, get the 1 or 2 terabyte models, because then you can have plenty of room to edit video.
Yeah, without having an external device, but which you can easily attach with a USB-C.
It's not just USB-C. It's this Thunderbolt.
Thunderbolt 4.
And so that's built into the same connector, right?
It's built into the same connector. So you could have a whole disk array or whatever you want, high-speed transfer into this laptop. So it just opens up everything. And then you just put out a breakout box and plug it into that Thunderbolt thing, and you could have all your connectors out the side and connect it up to anything.
Yeah, they call it Thunderbolt / USB 4.
I hear there's an option for 5G as well.
Yeah, it is an option if you buy the cellular model. It's got 5G.
Hmm. Yeah.
Bobby, are you going to get one?
You know, I got the first iPad Pro.
I know. So did I.
The very first one. And
when was that, 2017?
And you're listening to me through that. You know, that's how I use
I know, but don't you want all this
Opal
super
too.
M1 power?
LiDAR.
Don't you want to say you've got the power?
Yes. So
all your friends can say, ooh.
Okay,
so I'm going to eye this thing and
take a look at it.
Take a look at
it. Very good. Listen, we've got a final minute, Taylor. Any final thoughts?
Apple Watch 6 is fantastic. Charges in 100 minutes. Last 2 days, about 40 hours.
So the 6 series.
For sweet charges.
Big thumbs up.
You have the 6?
No, I have a 4. I have
you didn't get the 6.
Listen, cut them off. Come on.
All
I'm
right.
I'm just kidding.
Can't say enough about the,
lovely, Taylor.
The,
glad
the
you're
Apple
here.
Watch yeah. 6. It's incredible.
Okay.
But the blue looks like black. Get a gold one.
Get a gold one just for it stands
blue
out.
Blue looks
better,
like black.
Huh?
It doesn't hardly even looks blue.
Yeah, unless you shine a light on it.
Yeah, you got to be outdoors to see the blue. It's crazy.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Okay. Well, stay tuned.
I'll be back on June 8th. Afternoon of June 8th, watch June 7th,
the keynote. Developers Conference,
right? The Developer Conference keynote is Monday morning.
And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Okay, welcome back to the show. Wasn't that fun? Yes, you got to admire his enthusiasm.
That's true. Yeah, it's pretty unfiltered.
Yes.
Yeah. So, this hour, we're talking about cryptocurrency. Bobby, of course, has been very involved with that for all. We've done many stories on it over the years. A virtual currency that's secured by cryptography and makes it almost impossible to counterfeit or double spend. And networks of crypto based on blockchain technology have been evolving over the last, over 10 years now. And to talk about it today, we have our favorite Anon.
That's right.
Yeah, our favorite Anon. Anonymous crypto person.
Yeah, what I like to say is this is free advice and worth every Satoshi.
Yeah, yeah. He's choosing to be anonymous so he can talk more casually about the market and how it all works. I believe Anonymous is a millennial. Isn't that right?
I don't really consider myself any generation, really, but yeah, technically I would be, yeah.
You're an old soul.
Oh, millennial elder. We're curious as to what the latest things are going on in the crypto world. We've heard a few things, but I'd love to hear what you say is happening now. Could you give us an update?
Yeah, a lot has happened since we last spoke. Mainly, the big new kind of projects on the block, so to speak, are the NFT concepts, which are pretty fascinating, and I think there's a lot of places they can go, and they might turn into something really unique and substantial.
Could you define MFT?
Yeah, what's MFT for the uninitiated?
NFT, non-fungible token. And all that really means is that instead of each of these units of account being just another cent or another Bitcoin or whatever, each unit has its own attributes or sort of like a nuanced functionality. So this would be something like, people have ideas with things like deeds for houses, insurance policies, things that you don't want to get confused with other tokens.
Yeah.
So they're each unique and they're not able to be traded against one another as if they're similar assets.
Okay. So tokens in general, anything on the blockchain is just something with a unique identifier that can be distinguished from any other thing that's like it. And it's sort of like a social security number for whatever that entity is, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And so right now, a big boom or a big bubble aspect of that is like NFT art. So you have like a lot of really weird creations being made. A lot of them are very primitive and basic, things like a simple pixelated image that's made up of a certain amount of just colors and a certain amount of pixels. And you can change each of these pixels and each of the colors and make a unique image. Mm-hmm. And some groups have sort of arranged categories. Like there's like something called moon cats, which is basically just these little images basically of cats. Each one is unique. And it's really weird because you ask yourself, why are people making these and then people are buying them? And it really just goes back to like baseball cards and trading cards. Hmm. Because if you own a pixelated image,
yeah,
these days it's very easy to copy that image and use it wherever you want.
Yeah, that's why it makes it hard to be any intrinsic value from a currency point of view.
Especially if it's only one pixel off of something that everybody else has.
But you're saying this NFT can make digital art actually valuable now because it can't be copied.
Yeah, I thought the value of digital art was going the opposite direction, like towards free, because it's so ubiquitous, the supply is infinite, and the demand is never going to keep up.
Yeah, I would say both are true. I don't really know a lot about the whole art world and like how those markets really work.
Well, let's talk about things that are more like...
Like Bitcoin.
Bitcoin. Yeah, like, things that people do understand to the degree that they pay attention to it.
No, why did Bitcoin go from, was it 6,000?
No, it was over 60,000, and then for a minute dipped.
It went down to, it was down at 6 just a couple of years ago, I'm talking about. And then and then it went up rather dramatically over the last year especially, right?
Right. Okay, so since 2018, it's been 9,000% increase in value, and then last weekend, it went from around 60,000 down to 51,000 for an hour, and now it's back up to 59,000. What are those dynamics going on that you're aware of?
The most recent, that big kind of dip that we took from above 60 to down to, I think we hit like 51 or 52 really quickly.
Yeah.
That, nobody knows for certain exactly what is going to make the price do that, but from what we know, right around that time, there was a coal mine explosion in China, which basically caused some... We don't know if the miners were turned off because of being affected by the explosion or if there's some kind of direct connection, but essentially, miners were turned off as a result immediately following this. And there's some like rumors and speculations about the government, basically, like the Chinese government saying, hey, we need to turn these off for whatever reason.
Is it different, though, than, say, the factors that influence the stock market?
No, it's very similar. So what I was going to get at is there's that sort of fundamental piece of news. Mm-hmm. And then the other side of it that causes a lot of drama in terms of price being affected is margin and leverage traders, which is something that I do and a lot of people do that are involved in this.
Margin and leverage traders.
Yeah, because basically you can buy Bitcoin and own the Bitcoin yourself and then sell it at a later date. That's what we call spot trading, which means that you own the actual asset, not some derivative, not some abstraction of it. But then there's also another side of that, which is margin and leverage trading.
Margin. Could you hold that thought for a second, Anon? We've got to go to a commercial break. I'll be right back.
Yeah.
We're talking about cryptocurrencies and... specifically, just recently, the Bitcoin. So we have a question in regarding investments. Mrs. Future, do you want to tell us more about that?
Oh, well, as we went out to the break, we were just describing something that is common to anybody who's trading in an exchange, which is the different kinds of ways that you can buy and sell
right.
the items in the exchange. So you can either buy and sell the actual thing, or you can put in an order like a short or a long or an option or those kind of things, right? Is that what you wanted to explain, Anon?
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. And just to summarize the idea, when people are on these exchanges, you can set basically automated buys and sells. So hits a certain when the price reaches a certain target, you can either automatically sell or buy one of these assets or one of these derivatives. And so when you see these giant price spillages and these big dips in price, a lot of the time it's connected to the ratios at which people have set those automated sell orders. So if you buy at 50,000 and go up to 55,000, and then you set a automated sell order or a stop loss at, you know, 51,000, if we fall to 51,000 again, you're automatically going to be sold, and you know you're gonna get the money that you put in back.
That's similar again to how you play the stock market.
Yeah, it is. The mm-hmm. difference here is that a lot of people do margin and leverage with Bitcoin. Mm. And because of that, they aggregate very large amounts of these assets. And then they all sort of play the same game with certain ratios. So if the mm-hmm. price dips too much in one direction, mm-hmm. there's a cascade effect in all of these automated sells. Mm-hmm. So I might have my stop loss set at a negative 10% from the current price. Someone else has it set at negative 11, and this happens with many thousands of individuals. But once you hit a certain level, it triggers everybody. It also influences people that are just sitting there at the screen selling without an automatic order. But that's just sort of a way to understand why these big dips happen, is because there's a lot of leverage trading going on.
Mm.
And a lot of automated stop losses and things like that. Mm.
So how do you actually use Bitcoin yourself, or what is its value in your day-to-day? Are you only using it for long-term growth in value, like an investment, or do you use it to buy and trade things, or what?
I treat it as a store of value, especially with the situation our economy's in and our whole monetary policy. I basically treat it as digital gold.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I do not ever use it for transactional purposes.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's sort of like there's a great meme where there's two cavemen and they're building, they've just created fire. And one of them says, wow, look at this amazing thing that we have now. And the other one says, well, shall we sell it? And it's like, no, don't sell the amazing new invention that you have. It's something to be treasured and to kind of hold close, and especially with the implications, again, with our monetary policy. It represents something that's very unique in light of our excessive money printing.
So you mean then any time that you have a little bit of money, you will just put it in and get more Bitcoin, whatever the price is. And you do that because you figure that Bitcoin is not a fiat currency. Its value is only going to go up as our fiat currency becomes more and more inflated.
Correct.
So even though the price is 9,000% higher than it was a couple years ago, you're still buying it.
Correct. And because I'm a trader and I'm paying attention to price action a lot, I will be more strategic about entries and taking on new positions. But for the most part, yeah, I've bought at almost every price level. There's so many different levels, but I've bought it from the bottom to now. And like I said, I'll try to be strategic about it, but a lot of people will just dollar cost average, which means buy a certain amount at a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. So you just kind of buy when the price is low, you sell when the price is high, you have a percentage that determines whether you're buying or selling what you've got, or whether you're buying or selling something new, you know, an option, and it's all just formulas.
Yeah. And I basically have my long-term store of value bag, and that's sort of like what I'll put my Satoshis into when I buy them regularly throughout the year. And then I have my trading account, which is also made up of a variety of other coins.
Oh, so you actually are leveraging a lot of different coins.
Well, leverage I only use for specific coins. It's actually a really good question. But spot trading, meaning actually owning what we call bags of the coins, that I don't do leverage with. I'll just hold a spot position and then sell that spot position. But I do leverage with some of the smaller coins. A lot of the leverage stuff that I do is more Ethereum and Bitcoin because they tend to be a little bit more predictable on the charts. Mm-hmm.
We have a question on Bitcoin mining. Is that still a viable field to get into, or is it saturated at this point?
I would say yes if you approach it from the outside. Like, instead of trying to go and be a miner yourself, I would say look at the skills that are needed to mine.
Yeah.
And look at some of the other intersecting aspects of industry and try to maybe find, I mean, there's tons of mining companies opening up right now. So,
it's still a growth area.
Yeah, it's just a matter of how you're approaching it. Individual mining is pretty difficult these days. You really need to be like an entrepreneur with partners and a warehouse, and you need a lot of startup capital. But the mining is transforming right now into these big companies, very well managed. It's no longer a pet project.
Right. It's no longer the 49ers getting gold.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. We have a caller, Mrs. Future?
Yes, we do. We've got Tony from Castroville. Let's say hi. Hi, Tony. Do you have a question for Anon?
Well, I don't really have a question. I just want to stir the pot a little bit here. And
All right.
I honestly don't think Bitcoin is a hedge of to the overall monetary system. That being said, because Bitcoin crashed with the rest of the market in February 2020, and as well as a bunch of other I consider Bitcoin and crypto a speculative asset. It's all speculative. I think it's a pyramid scheme. That's just me, though. I think the only way for it to build value is for another buyer to come in and buy it at a higher price than you're getting in at. That's all it is. There's no intrinsic value. I mean, you might as well just use a credit card, in my opinion.
So what do you say to that, Anon? Thanks, Tony.
I understand when people feel like it's related to a pyramid scheme, but...
What's the difference?
I would say with this, when you buy Bitcoin, you own Bitcoin. There's no job required of you. There's no trade-off. You are giving away your U.S. dollars, essentially, but you're not expected to go get anyone else on board. The money's not really flowing in one direction, especially with traders involved, and the money is washing around like a washing machine. So I would say it's more like some kind of strange whirlpool than it is a pyramid. In light of that, I think the whole whirlpool or black hole concept is something that we are seeing live out, meaning if you look at the chart for U.S. dollars, it does not look good, especially against Bitcoin.
I was just reflecting on how Bitcoin would survive an economic crash in the normal world. Our caller was saying that they did crash along with the other currencies in the 08 time period. Would that happen now if God forbid, our economy crashes?
In 2020.
Go ahead, Bobby.
It didn't even exist.
It didn't even exist. Okay, so it's 2020.
Yeah, I was going to say it.
Okay, it's a little...
All right, good.
Well, that's good. That means there's a chance that it might survive better than the dollar.
Right. Well, how do you spend Bitcoin? Like, if you didn't want to use it as currency, what would you do? Can you buy anything besides other cryptocurrencies with it?
There's a lot of Bitcoin marketplaces, so to speak.
Tesla, so there's people buying it, and you can sell it for money. Is what you're saying.
The Bitcoin itself?
Yeah, I'm just trying to talk about the phenomenon of whether you're trading your dollars for something that is a currency or whether you're trading your dollars for something that is an asset, like a piece of art.
We got a texter saying, ask him about cashing out to real dollars. Is that a big deal right
now? And it sounds like maybe Sun was kind of getting at this too. A lot of people don't realize that selling your Bitcoin is very easy. There's two different questions happening here, which is, can you just send Bitcoin to a market, like a store, give them your Bitcoin, and they give you a service, which there's not that many great resources for that. Like I was saying, Tesla, you can now buy a Tesla with Bitcoin, which is probably the newest and hottest item to be known about. But the other side of it is, like, when people think about selling Bitcoin and cashing out to real dollars, a lot of people don't realize that it's a click of a button.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not talking, you don't find some shady guy who's going to take the money out from under his mattress and then hands it to you. Like, yeah, I mean, I can.
We got to go to a break.
Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Good. Hold on to that thought. We're going to go break. We'll talk to Anon about Bitcoin, and cryptocurrencies. We'll be right back. Okay, welcome back to the show. We're talking about crypto. The lines are lighting up here. We have another question. Bobby, do you want to, before I...
Yeah, I had a couple questions.
Yeah.
I just wanted Anon to maybe explain the difference between the IMF, International Monetary Fund, and their digital currency that they're proposing to come out with, and how that's different than traditional cryptocurrencies that we're dealing with. And then how is this relating to, in the, there's an anticipated great financial reset that might occur, and what could possibly happen after that?
What could possibly go wrong? I know. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. What do you know about that stuff, Anon?
Yeah, that's kind of a big, broad brush compared to what we're talking about, but go ahead.
Well, no, we just explain the difference between.
Quick. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Well, so I don't know a ton about the IMF digital currency that they're putting together, but just based on what Bitcoin represents, I can promise you that the IMF digital currency is probably going to be a centralized ledger, and if it is decentralized, it will be controlled by probably a very small number of people, and that really puts us back into the same seat we're in with the Fed and with our relationship to money printing now, which is that if anyone wants to, they just go ahead and do it. There's nothing really built into the system to prevent those changes from occurring. With their digital currency, I would say, again, centralized, not resistant to changes or policy that would rather give the power to the individuals that are making up the entire network of transactions.
Mm-hmm. So the Bitcoin network, then, you'd say the people there operate, like recently in the news, there was the whole GameStop buying group that, because they were all talking to each other on Reddit, they decided uniformly to bid the price of this stock up because they knew that that would generate a lot of automatic trading in their favor. And then after a big crisis, they were basically prevented from trading because their Robinhood, their trading organization, refused to allow them to trade off hours, but allowed other entities to trade off hours. And in terms digital currencies, there's something about the Bitcoin market where it's a whole bunch of people talking to each other, and yet it's anonymous. It's not centralized, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's pseudo-anonymous because everything is recorded and tracked, and as time goes on, basically, the Bitcoin blockchain is very likely going to become a really clean registry of every transaction happening, like, meaning that law enforcement or whoever will be able to interact with the chain and look at the data in a way that makes sense in terms of determining who's who, what's what, like, where's which accounts are connected, which accounts are communicating. Right now, it is kind of tricky. It's sort of like you got to dig through a bunch of different tools that look at the blockchain. Hmm.
I do get a couple questions for you. Do coin holders need to disclose held assets at tax time? So you need to disclose your assets at tax time.
I try to avoid giving any advice or serious recommendations around that. But I mean, yes, I believe there is a number, as far as I know, that if you're over that and you're holding, you are supposed to let them know. I think it's actually similar to gold. I think if you have a certain amount of gold, you're supposed to at least report it, whether or not you're selling it and creating a taxable event. You're still supposed to and let them know just what's going on in the background.
Yeah, and I guess that's different from country to country as well. Right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, as far as the U.S., I would say always doing more is better, because it's not something that you want to have to deal with later on when your Bitcoin is worth a lot more. And
okay. Also, one other question, then we have a caller.
We've got several callers.
Several callers? Okay, good. Do you pay transaction fees to cash out?
Yeah, you pay the network fees anytime you interact with it. So, yes, okay. When you buy them, when you sell, some exchanges will handle that for you. There's not many, but yeah, there's little ways to get around it, but the fees are not.
Okay, what are we talking about here? Like a credit card kind of 2-3%, something like that?
Every exchange is different, so it sort of matters if you're getting the Bitcoin from an exchange, which is sort of like a dealer, a broker dealer.
Yeah.
Or if you're buying it from a miner, then you would just be paying the network fee at the time, which is, I can't remember approximately what it is right now, but it's not a large amount at all.
Yeah, so as I was saying, a couple of percent maybe. Yeah.
All right. Okay. We got a couple callers. Right, we do. We're going to go to BC Santa Cruz. Hi, BC Santa Cruz.
Welcome to
the show. Do you have a question for our Bitcoin Anon?
Oh, actually, I got about 300,000 in Bitcoin and Ethereum, and my buddy's got about 4 million. And honestly, you can get a BitPay card, and I use it at every store in America.
Cool.
No problem.
What's it called? Where did you get it?
It's called BitPay.
BitPay card. Cool.
Yeah. It's regular card.
And you can just find it online?
Yeah. And then with that, also, you can, right now, as of, I think, that day, Morgan Stanley, like I have normal, you know, investment stocks, and they weren't allowed to trade it. They are, as of today, it's nationwide now. You can go to a regular broker and buy Bitcoin at your regular Morgan Stanley, run-of-the-mill, whatever, just like any other stock.
Okay, great.
Well, thanks for the info.
That's great.
I was hearing PayPal's Venmo.
And you know, they're also opening Versatile machines all over America that use Bitcoin.
So it's rapidly normalizing Interesting.
There's one in our Capitola Mall right now.
Really? Capitola Mall? They have a Bitcoin ATM?
Yes.
Amazing. Well, thank you. Fabricio, thanks for that info.
All right, appreciate that.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, have a good day. Yeah.
All right, you too.
Thank you.
All right, and then we have Tony, who called before.
Do you have any comment on the last caller, by the way? Anon?
Yeah. I would say if he's still listening, check out Fold Card, FOLD. Mm-hmm. And that's another good card. There's a lot of these cards that are coming out that are really interesting and have some really interesting benefits around either Bitcoin or some of these other coins.
Yeah, so it sounds to me like from what he's saying, it's becoming normalized more and more as part of our currency exchanges.
Yeah, there's a term called hyper-Bitcoinization that we talk about a lot in the Bitcoin community. And we've been anticipating it for a while. That's where the whole black hole comes in again, where as a maximalist, as someone who believes in Bitcoin, I think a lot of stuff is going to just get sucked into it, because it's a unit of account that is sound, and there's really nothing like it.
Yeah. Okay, so it's
all of the other cryptos get their value with the ebbs and flows of Bitcoin, pretty much,
Black hole.
Yeah.
But a black hole ecosystem, I know that's a heavy concept.
All right, so here I guess Tony still has one more thing he wants to say. Hi, Tony.
Hey,
welcome
Tony.
Back. Sorry about.
I just wanted to mention also that I think the only reason why Bitcoin is going up is because of inflation. Because if you think about it, the money printer went crazy. $7 trillion was printed.
Uh-huh.
And so that created inflation in Bitcoin and markets across the board. Everything is inflated right now. Real estate's inflated. My house went up, 6% in 1 year? You got to be realistic. There's always causation. I know causation does not imply correlation, but in a sense, it's a zero-sum game. Bitcoin is always exchanging dollars. Even that last caller who said he went to Capitola Mall and you could go to the ATM, they still exchange it in dollars, no matter what. It's a zero-sum game always. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to make that apparent. And also, too, is they're going to deem Bitcoin illegal in Turkey and India already.
Yeah, I was reading that.
So the only leading factor who has the power is government. They can deem anything illegal, just like Nixon did in the 80s. He froze all prices, all wages. That's some powerful stuff.
Yeah, you're going to see governmental play with this on a global scale.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Government has the ultimate power no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thanks for that, Tony. Appreciate it. Okay.
Yeah. Any comments?
I don't think the government can do a lot to affect Bitcoin. Maybe for us in our one country, but the way the network works, it's too widespread. It's too distributed for any government anywhere to have a seriously long-term crippling impact on it. Because the second that we lose parts of the network, once India goes offline, what we see is a lot of other miners pop up somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like a bush constantly being pruned and it's growing back more vigorously. But I understand what he's saying. Being illegal would put a huge damper on the price and would cause a lot of slowdown in growth. But if you think that it's going to be stopped by a government, you might not fully understand how the network works.
Yeah, when I've been listening to Bitcoin forums, say on Clubhouse, where people just trade all day long and talk to other Bitcoin people and exchange points of view, they are basically saying that governments have tried to get rid of Bitcoin, and yet the current, I guess, somebody that Biden has appointed, who's maybe the head of the SEC, is very Bitcoin savvy, is very friendly to Bitcoin. Yep. They think that in the U.S., they're figuring out how to tax and benefit from it more than ban it. So they're certainly trying to study it as a class of assets and a class of money that can be understood and help the government do what it does, which is tax our money and redistribute it.
You're absolutely right, Sonny. Bitcoin, to the people who understand it and the people in the government, it looks like an amazing opportunity to do everything we do, but do it better.
Okay, we're going to be right back after this break. Thanks and on. Dr. Future Show.
Right back. They never would come to me. Working on a mystery. Going wherever. Welcome back to the show.
I think you should talk about the PayPal's Venmo rolling out crypto server.
Yeah, okay, we will. Let's talk about that for a few seconds, but we got another caller on the line as well. But let me mention that PayPal's Venmo has rolled out crypto services for Bitcoin and Ethereum. Peer-to-peer mobile payment looks promising. It looks like it's another form of normalizing crypto in our culture.
It's definitely good news, and I think we're going to see this happen with pretty much every third-party payment processor just slowly getting sucked in.
Yeah, they say 30% of their users are already crypto holders. And then 20% of them began to invest more since the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic.
So what they said on Clubhouse is that the PayPal Venmo purchasing option isn't a wallet. It's not really a way of owning your crypto. It's just a way of purchasing it. So you might want to look into that.
Speaking
just still
of which,
have an exchange where the asset is held.
Yeah. You know? There's a.
Well, I think what they're saying is you can buy a representation of Bitcoin with them, and then here's where it gets tricky: is they might not let you actually withdraw it. So even if you had an exchange where you could buy and sell, if you buy some Bitcoin in Venmo, there's a good chance that you might not actually be able to move it to sort of a third party outside of you and Venmo. Mm-hmm. You would be able to interact with it within their ecosystem.
So you can spend it in Venmo, but it's sort of like Hotel California. Right. You can let it in, but you can never get it out again.
Exactly.
You can spend it in the company store.
Yep.
Okay, cool. So let's say hi to Rob from Scotts Valley. Hi, Rob.
Hey,
welcome
Rob.
To the show.
Hey, Rob. Hey, guys. What's happening? I just think it's whenever somebody says, and I'm old enough, I'm 65, to remember that people, when it comes to the internet or the government's involvement in things that we do or whatever. One of the earliest things I can remember is somebody saying, oh, this company's legit. They got a website. This was back in the mid-90s. Okay,
but that
great.
That was before then you blockchain.
Probably. And then you move on to, they'll never tax the internet, please.
Right.
And then you move on to, they'll never regulate the internet or content or speed or whatever. And then that came along. And then You just go on and on and on. And I'm just saying that the government's got one policy, or philosophy, if you will, is just cut us in or cut it out.
Yeah, just, good point. And, I think they want a cut of it because it's out of their control and it's a big chunk of the
they don't like
money
that.
Sloshing
right.
around in the international marketplace. So.
Yeah, well, whatever India and Turkey's reasons are for banning Bitcoin, as you will, but...
Well, they want to do their own digital currency. They're trying to do digital control.
But will the control forces ever have the hand over decentralized control?
My understanding is that the government had already issued a lot of Indian digital currency accounts years ago. A lot of people are already, the unbankable people that supposedly Bitcoin was developed to help serve were people with phones. And India went into that market by giving everybody a fixed limited account that they could never keep more than a certain amount in there. I don't really know much about it.
Sure.
Right. But they're not letting them put Bitcoin in that.
Sure. It seems like maybe even last week I heard, maybe on this radio show, is that the government is getting involved or is involved or going to, whereby when it's translated back to Federal Reserve notes, that there's going to be some reporting issues back to the IRS.
Once it hits a wallet that is a custodial wallet, meaning some financial exchange is offering you a chance to use that exchange for your transactions, that's a custodial wallet, then it has all of these rules that are set by the government that apply to securities and exchange and financial disclosure and everything. So the big question mark is that a lot of people don't have a custodian. They have their own wallet. They have their own hard drive or whatever they're using to keep those little bits safe. And that means that there need to be new rules to regulate it. Otherwise, it's the Wild West.
Yeah, and I guess I'm going back to the beginning whereby the regulatory monsters, if you will, have figured out a way to do all the things that they said would never happen. It has happened, and it will happen again. And regardless of the security, the privacy, regards to Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency, they're going to figure it out. Because don't forget, we put a man on the moon. We can do anything.
That's right.
I agree with you, Rob. So let's assume that we're going to be smart humans and we're going to keep figuring out ways to make things better, not just to appease the government, but actually come up with something that serves the greater humanity.
Yeah, well, philosophy is great, but reality sometimes is cruel.
Yes, well...
You never know.
Will the forces of control overcome the chaos of reality?
the creatives are in charge, and the controllers are playing catch-up.
Well, that may be always true, but they always seem to catch up. I don't know, man.
They're close.
Thank you, guys.
They're always close. All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, Rob.
Another question coming in regarding Dogecoin. A joke, isn't it? It's a payment option that Elon Musk has talked about.
Yeah, Elon Musk keeps boosting Dogecoin, and there's a whole Dogecoin community that's up there with the GameStop community. It's a bunch of guys that love Elon and that give away some free Dogecoin every time he mentions it on his Twitter feed.
But they said it's actually worth 47 cents.
Right.
No.
Currently.
Yeah. That's something. Wow.
Yeah. It was a penny in January, right?
Yeah, right around there. Yeah.
So is that a real currency, Anon?
Well, first, I should say none of these, I don't want to make the claim that any of these are actual currencies because currency, like in terms of a technical level, because currencies are usually issued by a central authority. And honestly, we really don't know. I mean, store of value is one way to describe Bitcoin, but we really don't know the totality of its application. So in terms of currency, it's hard to speculate because I'm not really that well-versed in actual currencies on a technical level, besides just very mild research. But in terms of store of value and the way markets work, obviously what we're seeing with Doge is, I would call it, an echo of Bitcoin. I don't think there's any fundamental reason that Doge is going up other than it's Bitcoin's new mutated cousins.
Well, it's the poker chip of a fan club. That's what cousin. I look at it.
Well, yeah, that's why I say like mutated.
He's very inexpensive.
Yeah, I mean, the reasons that people like Doge have very little to do with fundamental technology.
Yeah, they're not serious people aspects. Here on this, you know.
Well, hey, the opportunity to have something become more valuable while you watch is very inviting to many people.
Yeah, I'll put $100 in it.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. In terms of gambling, it's a very cute roulette board. That's how I think of Doge. Like,
on the roulette board, and it changes fast, and that makes it exciting in terms of betting, anyway. Very good. How about Ethereum? You always hear people talking about Ethereum blockchains, and a lot of coins are based on Ethereum.
And you have 1 minute to summarize.
Ethereum is something to pay attention to. It's got some really interesting fundamental differences to Bitcoin, and it has a lot of already functional applications in the world of DeFi. And DeFi is decentralized finance, which is essentially just an effort by a bunch of these coins to mimic all the services we have in our traditional financial system, but do it on a blockchain level and do it with a variety of nuances and changes that make it more efficient.
Okay, good. Well, thank you. Now, if people want to know more from you, tell them to go through me, right? Future@KSCO.com,
yeah,
and I'll forward it to
them. Definitely don't mind getting messages forwarded.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time and attention to this important topic. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, guys. It was fun.
All right. And right, have a good afternoon. And that's another fine show in the can.
All right, everybody. Thanks for your calls. Thanks for your comments and questions.
Thanks, Bobby, for being here.
Yeah, thank you, Non.
Laughs.
And Taylor,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, thank you, Bobby.